Imagine what it'd be like if we were really curious about each other.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Relational Spirituality, the weekly podcast of LargerStory.com, the podcast that sees all relationships as spiritual and all spiritual formation as relational. Now, here's your host for this week, Kep Crabb.
Welcome, everyone, to Relational Spirituality, brought to you by Larger Story. I'm your host, Kep Crabb. I've got one of my good friends today, Kent Denlinger, joining us as we continue with our conversation about the seven questions of spiritual theology. Question number one, who is God? You heard us talk a lot about that in the month of January last month. This month, we've been focusing on what's God up to, and we're moving into who are we? Who are we? And we're going to talk today with Kent about who are we, which is a huge question. And we're going to bleed in a little bit to the next question, number four, which is what has gone wrong? Welcome, Kent. Good to see you, my friend.
Thanks, Kep. Good to be with you.
So where do we start this whole conversation of who are we as we look at it in context of the seven questions?
It's like you said, man, this is a huge question. There's a lot of directions. And I usually take 2 or 3 weeks when I'm teaching on this question. Partly because you have the...
Yeah, 25 minutes.
Yeah. Partly because we have the whole gender issue. But I think where I would start was, I love that years ago, I read how Martin Luther said that we are simul justus et peccata. And it simply means in Latin that we are simultaneously sinner and saint, or saint first and sinner. And I love that. I think that having to carry that balance, that we are saint and sinner, we are redeemed, and to put it in the language for me of this question, is we have dignity because we're made in the image of God, and of course we have depravity, and all of who we are as image bearers has gotten flipped on its head because of our depravity. So dignity and depravity, how do we honor both of those things and think about both those things? What do those mean, really?
And I think the depravity in respect to where we are now seems to just be so prevalent in respect to who we are. You mentioned gender just real quickly, and obviously that's a big piece. And even culture is saying it's a big piece. It's just saying that there is no rules in respect to you're in charge. You can do what you want to, whatever you feel like is what kind of rules you. So as we talk about some of that in respect to the gender topic, and I'm not trying to get controversial quick here, but I know that this is a controversial topic, and I'm excited to dive into it at some level, even outside of what we're talking about now, in respect to the Fully Alive book. And how Dad approached the whole topic of gender and breaking those stereotypes of gender as men and women, and how each man and women, in terms of who we are together, give us a full picture of who God the Father is.
I don't think we should be surprised by what's going on, in part because when you look at Romans 1, I just heard, I forget who it was the other day, talking about wrath. And part of that, I think it might've been Daryl Johnson, who you've had on a podcast. I think Daryl talked about how wrath is just simply the part of it, at least, or a large part of it, is that God gave us over to what we want. And that heads towards death and destruction of the soul and of life. And so that's Romans 1. He's straight out of the scriptures. And the impact of that giving over is perverted sexuality. And that's what the scriptures say. That's not what I'm saying. That's what the scriptures say. So I am always surprised when Christians shake their head, oh, look at our culture. I'm thinking, why are we surprised? When we turn away from God, this is the outcome.
When you talk about being surprised, I think that's an interesting point, because we know how the story ends. And we know where things actually are going to go before the story does end. And to see these things go that way, I don't know. I think it was Lewis. Dad always says, if you can't remember who it was, always give it to C.S. Lewis. But didn't he say that hell is essentially getting your own way forever?
Yeah.
And so that's what you're talking about there. I'm God. I'm in charge here. I'm the one who's in charge. And man, I don't want to be God. I don't think you do either.
Yeah. And I think where I'd like to think first about who we are as men and women, not so much the gender issue, but we were really made to commune with God. And whatever's gone wrong, let's flip that upside down. Turned all of who we are as emotional and volitional and rational and personal beings and made it about self. What Jesus came to do is to redeem all that and to draw us back into what really is true resonance with who we were created to be. And who we were created to be are God's representatives in this world, God's vassal representatives, an old ancient Near East term that we were put in this world to represent the King, God. And that's the work that God is doing, is to bring us back to who we were intended to be. So I don't ever want to lose sight of that amidst all the muck and all the chaos that is
lost in that. Yeah. I love it when you talk about the four circles. It reminds me of something that Dad didn't, later on, I think he got away from it a little bit, probably not theologically, but realizing that the whole personal, rational, emotional, volitional is what makes up who we are. And it's interesting because the emotional, the rational, and the volitional piece of it is really all about us. It's that personal that brings in that relational component that really that rounds us out at some level, I think.
Yeah. And I think for us to understand, you're talking about question four, the next question, for us to really understand how sin has affected it, we need to understand that it's taken all those really good aspects of who we are as image bearers, like the personal aspect of that we deeply desire something. And suddenly, once we desire, we're saying that we desire something other than God that really is going to bring us life and satisfaction. And that's foolishness. And for God to redeem that is to help us come to discover that our deepest thirst and our deepest desire really is for connection with Him. And most of us could say that. I'm not sure we really truly believe that. I'm still convinced at times that if I could just get a little more money or I could get a little more of something, that's what would make my life whole. And it's just not true. And I think it's easy to see question four, what's gone wrong, sin, in a very shallow way, rather than seeing that it literally took who we are and flipped us upside down. And God is trying to set us right. That's the work of the Spirit. And it means all of those things from who we are as emotional beings. I wrote out here on a piece of paper, the desire to enjoy God is secondary to the belief that pain is my greatest enemy and pleasure is my greatest friend. And that's what we're ruled sure. by our feelings rather than an example of this is where Paul talks about in Philippians 3 that our God is our belly. It's like, or whatever our appetite is, that's what we go after to believe that's what's going to give us life. And it just doesn't. It just doesn't.
I've always said that God gave Satan the trump card, no pun intended, in respect to our self-centeredness. That's always the piece. And then, but then at the same time, that just shows you the power of the Spirit to overcome the power of our self-obsession. Yeah. Is how Dad, I know, loved to term it. You started this conversation today talking about sinner and saint. And how we're made up in that way. I started thinking as we start to dive into this, who are we? And then you went into what's gone wrong. Why do you think that Dad decided to have these questions in this order? Is this the right order to have these questions? I know obviously to start with who is God, I think is good.
Right.
But is there, and I love how we finish. And I actually did a podcast a few weeks ago with Anthony, who I know, and we did it on question six, because he said, I just want to talk about question six. I said, oh, me too, man. I love questions. But what about the order of these questions, man? Is it important for us to know who we are before we start to work into what's gone wrong with who we are?
I think so. I think because of the dignity thing, that's the greatest passion that God has is to restore our dignity as worshipers and as image bearers and as ambassadors to who He is and the message. So to understand that before we get to the thing that, hey, here's what went wrong then. So then here's what God's doing about that to restore us back to who we were originally created to be. I don't know whether that order, I haven't looked recently, but it might follow a systematic theology. Obviously each of these questions represent what you'd find in a systematic theology book from anthropology and theology proper being God and ecclesiology, all those kind of things. So I don't know whether it follows that, but maybe it's because we've been in the rhythm of the questions for so long that they feel like the right order to me.
So, I think so too. I was wrestling with that. And I think that the Dad actually had a specific thought in mind, and it probably did follow a systematic theology perspective. But being immersed in these kind of questions, one of the questions I asked one of our guests one time, and I'm curious to know your thoughts. Why are these seven questions so important?
I think they're the questions that God's word is really answering. I think we ask a lot of questions. Job asked a lot of questions. And at the end of the story of Job, two chapters later or whatever it was, he's no longer worried about the answers to his questions. But God has answered some questions about what Job's purpose is and what God's up to. and what it means to trust. So to me, these are questions that are what the scriptures are about. They give you a totality of the story that God is telling. And the answers then help us have formed some categories out of which we can understand who God is and what the scriptures are saying and who we are, how we fit into this story and how we relate to each other. Yeah, I think they're an unbelievable resource. And I liken them to having played sports, having been an athlete, played basketball. You got to learn the fundamentals to really understand the game of basketball. Anybody can walk out and throw the ball up and it might go in the hoop and try to dribble and all that kind of stuff. But it's only when you practice the fundamentals and they almost feel mechanical until at some point. I can remember trying to learn a spin dribble in seventh or eighth grade. I saw this guy doing it all the time in high school gym. And I thought, I got to learn how to do that. And I threw the ball down the street about 20 times chasing after it until I finally learned it. And then it becomes second nature. And I'd like to think that the answers to these questions create categories, fundamentals that just get into the fabric of who we are so that when I'm talking with somebody, we had a couple come to our house a couple of weeks ago and chatting with them. My mind right away was when the gentleman was talking, it was going to, what is masculinity here? And he, I think, was proving our understanding of masculinity by what he wasn't doing. And so I think they just, otherwise, I think we tell people at times, be curious. Curiosity is so important. But then you go, what am I curious about? I was in a doctoral program where I was told, we want you to listen. And I raised my hand and I said, what is it we're listening for? Mm-hmm. And the professor at that time really couldn't give me an answer. And I'm thinking, scriptures tell me that I'm listening for something. I'm listening for thirst. I'm listening for ways in which a person is foolishly relating based on that thirst. I'm listening for sin in a deeper category. I'm listening for where God might be doing something. I'm listening for the life of God in a person. All those things grow out of these questions. So
yeah.
I just think they're just a wonderful, maybe you could structure it another way. I don't know, but for me and for probably us, I think they've become an incredible way of thinking about the story that God is telling.
I love how they are designed in respect to their order. But as I think about the questions that we're talking about today, questions 3 and 4, it seems like those are questions that culturally are really being attacked. Mm-hmm. Who are we? Well, you can be whoever you want to be. You can be whatever you want to be. You want to be a boy, a girl, whatever, all these kind of things. And then the next question, which we're going to deal with next month, is the hamartiology question, is what's gone wrong? And that just seems to be, you mentioned the word sin. Nowadays, what does that mean? What is sin? And it's just, it's almost a word now that we don't even think about anymore. Because we're so self-obsessed with what I want is where it goes. And so these two questions seem to be really in the crosshairs of our cultural direction, certainly here in the United States. And I know we have people all over the world that get a chance to watch some of these podcasts, and we're under attack. And this is absolutely spiritual warfare. And I think my biggest question is, how do we join into the fight and get into the battle?
I think when God does his redemptive work in us, we begin to, these aspects of who we are as individuals begin to get redeemed and reformed. For instance, you just said that the cultural emphasis is, who am I? And if I could just discover more, if I could just be more of myself, then everything would be okay. If I could just tell my story, if I could just be heard. And some of those things have some value. When you think about, hey, we were built to think in a way that's consistent with who God is and the way he structured things. But then because of sin, that gets flipped on our head. And now our thinking is whatever I think, whatever culture says or whatever. And I think when as God redeems us, we begin to get back to the whole thing of, wait a minute, my thinking needs to change. And I need to think like God. Well, who does God say that I am? Who does God say that I am? And it isn't about who do I want to be or who I think I want to be. I just think that leaves us really empty. And
it's what we're so naturally designed to do.
Yeah.
We come out of the womb with a self-protective, and now they're saying you need more self-esteem, you need more self-awareness. It's just the self, and it's, you don't need to teach me how to be self-centered. I'm pretty good at that. I got that one down.
Yeah. And I think all that feels fascinating to us. And again, I don't want to throw it all out. I think there's a bigger purpose in that discovery. As I do discover things, then I got to bring that up against, what is God saying here? And what does it mean to have something in that area? How does God redeem my story? Otherwise, then we start living into that I need boundaries and I need this and it's all, yeah. And I think God can do a lot of healing and has done a lot of healing in all of our lives. But it means we've got to come back and submit to who he says we are, to what he's up to, and to how that actually happens. And that's what these questions are really getting at.
I love that. And my mind goes to a couple of different areas, and I'm just curious to know your thoughts. I think I've got a few positions on it. But in looking at question three, who are we, which seems to be so viciously under attack now, why is and I guess it's just spiritual warfare is the easy answer to some degree, which isn't an easy answer necessarily, but why is gender being so viciously and aggressively attacked now? We have elementary school children who are being shaped and molded now in a way that doesn't allow them to understand the real implications of gender. And when I look at the definition of number three, as Dad put it out here, it's sexual beings who were created in the image of God, designed to enter into relationship with the Trinity and with the capacity to relate to others in the same way that the members of the Trinity relate amongst themselves. Mm. But again, you put the words, we're sexual beings. We're made male and we're made female. And that, just to say that now, is controversial, which I would love to see what Grandpa Crab would do if he was around it. He'd be spitting over in his grave like crazy, thinking, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
We're really chatting about this? But that seems to be now commonplace.
Yeah.
Why are they so aggressively going after sexuality?
I'm not sure I'm wise enough to have a great answer to that, other than going back to Romans 1. If the core of who we are is masculine and feminine, then that's where sin is going to strike most deeply. And because of that, then I think that's what's getting most perverted. And I think somebody said the definition of foolishness is that it's foolish, that we don't really understand why it's happening and what the reason is behind it. It just, so at one level I go, I don't know, greater minds might have a better answer than I do, but I'm not surprised, because you can get away from a lot of addictions. You can get away from drugs. You can get away from alcohol and things like that. You can't get away from yourself and who you are as a gendered image bearer. And if I don't turn to God, then I am going to just chase after whatever. And we've given such license. Carly used to have an image, which I used to have. You could plug something into about two outlets. Now there's 20.
Yes.
You can be this, you could be that, you could be this, you could be that. And when kids are at the age of exploring and you're suddenly opening the Pandora's box to anything, then of course they're going to go after. They're going to go after things because there's curiosity. And there's a question. Every kid as he's growing up has a question in his soul about who he is or who she is thing. So I think there's going to be a proclivity to go that direction that just makes sense given the fall. If there isn't, again, God is the one telling us who we are.
That's the only way to make sense.
Yeah.
If you try to look at some of these things from just a rational, logical perspective, men competing against women in sports, I just am still having just real challenge with all these things. But again, I think that for me, it goes back to Genesis, where he made them male and female. Mm-hmm. And then that the spiritual warfare, which we were talking about a second ago, is so in your face, prevalent now in respect to that whole concept of gender, which is who we are. I was made a male. I was made a man with the opportunity to represent the image of God as a man. Yeah. I can't represent the image of God as a woman. I can't do that. You can't do that.
Scott McKnight makes the point that what sin did was, I think it's Genesis 3:15, maybe. He puts it in this kind of language, that the man and the woman now are climbing over and on top of each other. That's what sin has done, rather than being complementary, walking side by side. And our culture has added to that. I think all the women's lib stuff, things like that, is in it, and it grows out of, all of this grows out of a deep hunger to know who we are and to find some sense of resonance in our souls. We all feel such dissonance in our souls, every one of us, redeemed or not. And we would say that because of Christ, that the only way to find peace, obviously, in the midst of the chaos is in him. If not, then you're just going to continue on a hunt. The next available thing is going to become, maybe that's life-giving. I'll try that. And there's an image of almost, it can almost be disgusting, but it's almost like we're all running around with our umbilical cord trying to hook it onto something to find life.
To feed us.
Yeah, because we're dependent. We were born dependent. And we took our source from our moms in the womb, we got out and we break relationship with God, but I'm still dependent and I'm still in need of something. And that's part of Romans 1, 2, is that God said, you looked to the created rather than the creature. And so we're all asking people and things and culture to define who we are, to give us life, you know? And hey, if you're saying that kind of sexuality is going to give me life, I'll try it. That might fit me. And as you said earlier, Satan had the better ticket. It works for a while.
Right.
But it leaves us empty. The prodigal son, he went on.
For a season.
Yeah, for a season, the prodigal son probably enjoyed his life. And then at some point in time, it ran dry. And that's our prayers. It runs dry for an individual here and an individual there. I don't think it's ever going to fully run dry for the culture, but maybe an individual or two gets to the end of their rope and says, man, this is cutting it. It's got to be hope someplace.
I think at some point we all are. I've seen a few people go into the next life. And we're all going to be death and taxes, two things you can't avoid. And when you watch that crossover, you mentioned something just a second ago with the whole self concept and how we're just addicted to self. Dad, I think he used to say, I think it was Dad, maybe was quoting somebody, but we're all addicted to something. And
Gerald May in a book, Addiction and Growth.
Oh, yeah. I knew it was something. Yeah. And I was going to give it to Lewis, but I figured that probably would. But, and until you have the Holy Spirit, you don't have that flesh spirit battle that I think lasts till the last breath, because that spirit of self in us is always raging.
Yeah.
And I've been it's interesting because I was looking at Galatians 22 and the passage before the fruit of the Spirit, it talks about all the sins. And then at the end of the passage, it says, and anything else you can think of, all the obvious sins. And he names off sexual immorality and pride and rage and names off 10 things. And anything else you can think of. And because we've all got that. But then if the only way to have those fruit that the Spirit talks about is through the Spirit, do we have the opportunity or the ability, the capacity to be kind outside of having the Holy Spirit?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I'll tell you something that's really been helping me. I realize, like Romans 7, when I see something about my life and I wish I could get it changed and I can't, a prayer that's been shifting me is I've been saying to the Lord, thank you, Lord, that you did what I am unable to do.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean something can't change and I can't make choices because the Holy Spirit, but it starts with recognizing that Jesus came. He did in the wilderness what the children of Israel couldn't do. He did on the cross what you and I can't do because we're so consumed by self, as you've been saying. And he just did that. And it shifts me away from, oh, I'm such a louse, to God, thank you. Thank you for your mercy.
Great.
And thank you that you have accomplished. You could fulfill the law. I can't. You could love perfectly. I can't. And that it incites my hunger for a better day, but it also just leaves me in a place of worship. And I think it's the right prayer. And going back to also another thought I had is going back to your question about the order here, that's going to become really important when we get to 4, because we got to see how bad things really are before question 5 is going to mean much to us. What God did about the problem, we can go, oh yeah, he saved us. Jesus died on the cross. But if we don't really understand question 4, not just at an answer of sin, but an answer that's so much deeper than that and shows itself in such subtle ways in our relationships. And just, I was listening to Daryl Johnson again this morning on a podcast, and he's in the Sermon on the Mount, and he's just saying, Jesus is talking so much here about motivation. What's the energy behind what I'm doing? Because we can do good things for really bad reasons. I mean, it's so much about our energy. And until we see that, we're not really going to be truly broken, which leads to the beauty of question 5. What's God done about it?
And I love what you say too, in terms of who we are. We're not capable of doing anything in our own self. And I think the whole notion of humility and those things is to really realize who we are. And I think that leads into the next question of the depth of the problem, where it really is separate. And the problem required Jesus to come and be sacrificed. So it was a pretty serious problem.
Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but we all have stage 4 cancer of the heart.
Yeah.
Paul said, you're dead in your transgression. So we need a new heart. And that's the beauty of what God did. He took the law and he wrote it on our hearts. And now, because of the death and resurrection of Jesus, it is now possible for us to join Jesus in love a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
To die to self, to make choices.
I like that example. because Dad used to say, we all have cancer. Some of us don't realize it. Some of us think we're treating it with an aspirin, and some of us are leaning into it.
Yeah.
But to understand that you've got cancer of the heart, of the soul, in a way that only the Spirit can cure.
I know we're getting to the end here, and I just want to remind us again that the beauty of this question is that God really did form us in His image, and there is this incredible thing that took place, person who came to redeem us, to bring us back to what we were originally intended to be and what we will know for all eternity. Our hope is certain. Our hope is not, I hope I can become a better lover. No, the hope is you will be someday. You will be perfect just like your Father in heaven is perfect. And that's our ultimate hope. And we wait for that day, but we also try to humble ourselves enough to let the Spirit do His work, to reshape our thinking, to reshape our desires, to help us properly identify our desires, to help us see that our emotions are a pathway to God. We don't live based on our feelings. John Coe, out at, I think, Rosemont once said, feelings are lousy leaders. They're great indicators, but they're lousy leaders.
Yeah.
And so God is redeeming all that. And the more we fall in love with this person, Jesus, the more He's going to redeem that and make us into who we're meant to be. And that's going to resonate with how we were created. I don't want to lose sight of that.
Oh, Kent, I just love that, man. I really enjoy chatting with you, bro. And this is fun to talk about. I hope that you people watching will continue to stay immersed in these questions and wrestle with these questions and continue to join us as we dive into some of the nuances and intricacies of some of these questions as we tackle them with you as well. So we appreciate you joining us. Ken, anything else? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I a little self-promotion here, but I teach a class on these seven questions via Zoom. So I'm just finishing up one with 30 some people in it, starting another one in March. So if people want to take a deeper dive, they can shoot me an email or they can go online to Soul Signature Ministries, which is our ministry, soulsignatureministries.org, and contact us and sit through 8 or 16 weeks of these very questions to get it down into your soul. I invite people, come on here with a friend or a spouse so that you can talk about it in between, because you got to get it into your own soul. You got to knead it into the dough of your heart, kind of thing.
We've got to link you up with us in respect to that so people can have access to some of those kind of things. I think that would be great, because I think these questions are very important to ponder and to have positions on in some ways. I think they do help ground you when the waters start to get deep.
Yeah, I think nothing has impacted me more.
Yeah.
From these questions and the answers to them.
Yeah. Kent, I love you, brother. I sure appreciate your time. Folks, thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.
If you like what you heard today, hit the like button just below. Then come back by subscribing to our podcast channel. For more resources on relational spirituality, go to our website at largerstory.com. Thank you.